This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Good morning. Greetings this morning. It's good to see everybody here. I greet you in the name of the great physician. He's the one that heals our diseases and gives us comfort, doesn't he? So how many of you are medical people? You work in medicine somehow or another. All right? And how many are not? Okay, so we have 57% medical people and 43% non-medical. I don't know. Something like that. A good mix here. And that's good. We are going to be saying things that I think are applicable to everyone. Maybe not in the same setting, but you can make the application in the setting where you are. And I enjoy my work, and I trust you do too, especially if you work with people. That is a way to minister. So, how can I minister to people's medical needs is the title of this workshop. And how did Jesus minister? I like to start there because I think he's the great physician. He did it perfectly, right? We can't do it as perfect as he did, unfortunately. But, you know, Jesus saw the sick. He saw the lame. He saw the blind, the dumb, the epileptic, the demon-possessed, all kinds of severe things, and some not so severe. I think Peter's mother-in-law had a fever, high fever. Well, that's a daily thing, you might say, for various reasons. But maybe she would have died if it wasn't taken care of. I don't know what she had, what was causing the fever. But he healed them of their physical ailments, their disabilities, and so forth. And he could heal people miraculously. Wouldn't that be good? We could just put our hand on them and it doesn't work quite like that, does it? Not in our day. Although miracles still happen, of course. But he was and he is the great physician. So I think it does as well to take note of how he did it. Those of us that are in the medical profession in some capacity or another, do have an opportunity to minister to people's medical needs because that's why they come to us. That's why we work. That's why we're there. And yes, we've been trained to diagnose and treat many different diseases, conditions. Modern medicine has made great advances that I don't understand even, and let alone the common person, how they're going to understand what's all going on. But there's many things that can be done to meet people's medical needs and to prolong their life. Well, I'm going to talk first, kind of the basics, you might say, and I divided this into, first of all, healthy bodies. And in 1 Corinthians 3, 16 and 17, I think you're familiar with this, where it talks about us as Christians being the temple of the Holy Spirit. It says, "Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are." If you're working with Christian people, one thing I use, anyway, is to point out to them that if they're the temple of God, then they need to take care of this body that he lives in. Which means don't be putting things into your body that would defile it or that would harm it, and so forth. So that certainly goes for smoking and drinking and some of the other things that people put in their bodies. But we can minister to people's medical needs by showing them how to prevent illness, too. That is, I'm actually an osteopathic physician, which emphasizes prevention and treating the whole person, not just the disease. And so helping them to prevent illness, which saps their energy and their vitality and their ability to be a Christian witness, I think is good. How is a person that is severely depressed going to minister to other people? Pretty tough, right? Because, you know, you're not able to take care of yourself, you might say, let alone help other people. So we need to learn how to try and get above that. And I will treat that a bit more completely towards the end. All right. So balanced diet, proper sleep, proper exercise. You've all heard this many times. Learn time management skills. We can teach people that. A lot of my time is spent in teaching people, and probably you as workers, that's the same thing too. You're probably telling people what to do and how to do it, what things to help their life be better. We can try to get them to take their pills so that their blood pressure is controlled, or their atrial fibrillation is under control, or their diabetes is under control, things like that. I spend a lot of time doing those kind of things. Preventing heart failure, how to treat heart failure. So we can diagnose all kinds of diseases and conditions, take care of situations that people are going through. But we're going to look at what Jesus did here in just a second. What these physical illnesses, these physical conditions, are those the real needs of sick people? Yes, there are real needs, but I think there's deeper needs, almost the majority of the time, perhaps, that we need to be looking at. And that is where I see Jesus did. So let me read from Matthew 9, this account that of Jesus healing the paralyzed man. In Matthew 9, it says in verse 1, "And he entered into a ship and passed over and came unto his own city. And behold, they brought him to a man sick of the palsy, lying on a bed. And Jesus, seeing their faith, and unto the sick, said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, be of good cheer, thy sins be forgiven thee." And of course, we're going, what? He's paralyzed. What are you talking about his sins for? "And behold, certain of the scribes said unto themselves, This man blasphemeth. And Jesus, knowing their thoughts, said, Wherefore think ye evil in your hearts? For whether it is easier to say, Thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, Arise and walk. But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sins. Then he saith to the sick of the palsy, Arise, take up thy bed, and go into thine house. And he arose and departed to his house. But when the multitude saw it, they marveled and glorified God, which had given such power unto men." So that's how Jesus did it, in that instance at least. He forgave this man his sins. That was the real need. That was the major need in this man's life. Being healed of paralysis was sort of a bonus. You know, he healed him physically too. And I don't know that I always have that right attitude. We just heard about attitudes, you know, redemptive attitudes. We're not always thinking of that. But his real need was an unsaved condition. That is obvious. The freedom from quadriplegia was much better. You know, he was born of eight legs when he came in, and he left with only two, as you've heard said before, probably. Four men brought him in, so eight legs, and then he was down to two legs, which is great. You know, the beautiful thing about medical work, and I'll ask for a raise of hands just a bit from you perhaps too that do that way, is when people come to you with their medical needs, something wrong in their bodies, then you also have an opportunity to meet their emotional and spiritual needs, because they're kind of vulnerable, or they're kind of feeling up against it, however you want to say. How many of you have noticed that? That's pretty much, I've noticed that. And I've said many times, I'm not a very good door-to-door salesman. You know, I just hate to walk up to somebody's door and try to sell them something that they don't need at a price they don't want to pay and all that, because I don't like it when they do it to me, so why would I want to do it to them? So don't come to my door. No, just kidding. But when people come to me, and they're begging for something, hey, the door's wide open. It's pretty easy to sell it then, you might say, because you have an answer that you can provide to them. So yeah, they're often hurting in body, and because of that, they're usually more open to other things that are going on in their lives, more open to spiritual help. Their sense of need of God is much greater, because they find out that they can't control everything after all. You know, some people have to be in control of everything, but when their health gets out of control, you know, even the billionaires or whoever it might be, they're at loss. They don't know what to do. They can't control that. And so the door is open to point them to Jesus, point them to the real answer that can meet their need. And again, I imagine you've had multiple opportunities to minister to people in that way, like I've had. To me, going to work, that's going to minister. You know, that's my opportunity. That's when I rub shoulders with people. You know, I see probably 50 people a day, something like that, that you can minister to. Some it's very brief, others can be kind of long and mess up your schedule, but you know, that's part of it. That's just part of the work. All right, well, we're a threefold being, so I'd like to talk a bit about healthy souls as well. We can help people with their emotional needs. That is part of your soul, the way I would understand it. Again, we can point them to Jesus. We can point them to the Bible. I keep a little New Testament in every room in my office, every treatment room. And although I don't necessarily turn to it that often, I usually just talk to them about it, because a lot of them are already familiar, perhaps. But it's there, and often they're, I'll put it this way. I take care of some real strict Amish people that they don't get the chance to read their Bibles, I don't think. They go to church, and the preacher preaches in High German, and I don't know how many of them understand it altogether. But they don't have a Bible, you know, the congregation, just the minister, and he doesn't use it, of course, when he's preaching. He quotes from it or whatever. So anyway, it's these low-order Amish men that I often see reading the Bible when I come in the room. And then I hate to come in and interrupt them. You know, I should have waited longer. Should have let them read a little bit more, you know. But that's good. Yes, we need to remember that we are... The person that we're taking care of or that we're helping is, it's not just a body, but it's also a soul and a spirit. And we need to look at that whole person. God wants us to be healthy in all three areas as much as possible. And so one of the big things when you're taking care of a person's soul or helping them out is to try and point out that they can't just rely on their feelings. That is a big problem. People say, well, I feel terrible today. And of course, now everybody's starting to feel better because springtime is coming, the sun is shining, and it's not quite so cold. And so they have this upbeat attitude. Well, come on, that shouldn't be the only reason. I mean, it's okay, but that shouldn't cause us to go up and down so much. It's serving God is what should really be doing that. We need to be relying on the facts of the Bible rather than just our feelings. And I think you all know that. Well, as Dan mentioned at the beginning, I am a family physician. I have this little clinic in the town of Mount Eaton, Ohio. It's northeastern Ohio. I hire 3 workers, or at least I try to. I have some trouble sometimes keeping them. Right now I have 3 and a potential one. A receptionist and 2 nurses is a general setup that I use in my little clinic. So, and all of them are born-again Christians who love Jesus. That's a criteria when I hire them. I wouldn't hire someone that isn't. That's why it's a little hard for me to find good help sometimes. But I tell them to be long-suffering with the difficult patients, because they're good for our development of our character, you know. And some can be pretty difficult. We need to give the patients a benefit of a doubt, meaning that, you know, if they have a preference, well, pretty much go that way. I mean, as long as they're not going to hurt them. Matters of preference, the patient's most always right, in quotation marks, perhaps. But you also need to smile even when you don't feel like smiling. You need to bite your tongue various times when you feel like, you know, retorting or whatever. But lending a listening ear is certainly a big part of it, as we know, to help people's problems, their hurts. That's how you can start earning their trust, is by listening. All right. Now, I want to talk about some practical things that I do and that you can do in your place of business or place of work, perhaps. Maybe not all the same, but you can apply some of these things to minister to the needs of those that we come in contact with. Of course, the people that I mostly work with are patients that come to see me, or they're coming for some kind of advice, and they might have a physical or an emotional ailment, something like that. Well, the first thing I like to do when they come in the waiting room, we have just a little waiting room, for about 8 people to sit down maybe, and I've got racks on the walls, and in the corner there's a stand with companions and, you know, the CLP Sunday school papers, the reaching out, although right now I'm out of those. Seat of Truth, I don't know how many are familiar with that. Christian Aid makes those, and I like to have those out there for them to read. Mostly all Christian literature, and it says help yourself, they're free, you know, they can take them with them, it's fine. I do have a few other magazines there that people can look at if they want to, but that's the main thing. So literature here, I gotta catch up with myself here. Yeah, give them literature, something to look at, because, you know, they're gonna have to wait on you. Why else do they call it the waiting room? You know, that's where they need to be for a little bit until you bring them on in. So let them read something good while they're waiting to be seen. And many are reading this literature when they're called into the room, to the treatment room. And often they'll bring it with them, which is fine. All right, so they get into a treatment room. I have 4 main rooms, 1, 2, 3, 4, that we fill up with people. And in each room, I've got a little stack of tracks just for you and a few other things. And on top of that is the New Testament. That's the paper holder, you know, to keep it down. So then they're about always reading something there, because who wants to just sit there? And of course nowadays they look on their cell phones too, but if they want to read something, it's there. And I suppose you're all familiar with Just For You. I just picked out some of them here that says, Just For You if you wonder why God allows evil, Just For You if you want to know your future, Just For You if you are tired. There's a lot of people that say they're tired. Just For You if you need a friend, Just For You when you feel a financial squeeze, Just For You if you are running from God. And there's many more titles, as you probably are familiar. But the thing is that I like about these, even if they didn't pick one up and start reading it, quite often somebody has, let's say, GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, where they need to take Prilosec. Well, it's over the counter, so I don't have it in my office, but I take the Just For You and I turn it over, and there's this nice space right here. I write the name of the whatever it is there to pick up, maybe the generic name too, and how to, you know, a little bit how to take it. Then I give it to them. Then they usually fold it like this and put it in their pocket. But you know that now they have it in their pocket, so later they can read it and study the steps of salvation that are always there at the last page, as you're probably familiar with. So that's a great way to pass it out when they need it. And so they're not going to, I've never had anybody refuse it. They always take it, because I wrote on there what they're supposed to take. So that's a good little thing that I like to do. All right. In the rooms I have mottos on the walls. Pictures, I have pictures, and then I have mottos. In one it says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Another one says, "They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength." Another room says, "Faith is daring the soul to go beyond what the eyes can see." And of course, I have my nurses take these people in, and they listen to what their chief complaint is, their problems, whatever. And if they're in emotional distress, you know, they can pray with them or listen to them, give me a heads up on a little bit what's going on before I go in, so that I'm a little bit more ready. But that is the big thing, is to listen to their hearts. That is a way to meet people's needs. Many people just need to get it out, as you probably know. They just need to tell somebody about it. And especially if they tell, you know, if they have a medical problem and then they tell a medical person about it, that really helps. And it seems for some reason that it helps even more if they tell the doctor about it than the nurse, because sometimes the nurse, you know, explains everything and da 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 da, and they come out and they're a little frustrated because they don't listen to what they say, and then I go in and tell them the very same thing pretty well, and okay, fine, fine. So now they're going to do it. Well, that's just, I don't know, attitudes, I guess. But there have been times when the nurse spent quite a bit of time speaking to the patient. And I remember a particular situation, a case where a lady, a young lady, 20-year-old lady, came in very emaciated. She was bitter against her dad due to some mistreatment, and she could barely eat. And of course, she was classic anorexia nervosa. She lost a lot of weight. She weighed about 80-some pounds. And of course, she had all kinds of things to talk about. And my nurse led her to Jesus. She accepted the Savior before I even came into the room, which was great. And I still take care of her. She comes back and she's how should I say, a growing Christian. She's actually, I'm taking care of her right now because she's pregnant. She's married, and I think it's her second or maybe her third one. Can't keep track sometimes, that she's pregnant with right now. So my nurses helped me a lot. And how many of you are nurses? Okay, there's seven or eight of you maybe, good. Or how many are medical workers that have a chance to talk to people otherwise? Set. Yeah, most all of you. Okay. And you all talk to people sometime, I think, right? So you have chances to communicate and point them to Jesus. All right. Well, so the nurses really helped me out because they kind of set the tone. You know, the receptionist greets the people, and then the nurses, you know, go from there, and then I come in. So I come in, and of course, the big thing is to be a good example. You greet the people by name, and you give them a smile. You ask them what's going on. You try to make them feel comfortable. And okay, I've practiced now for, let's see, 35 years, I think it is. Yeah, going on my 36th year. So I'm taking care of the children of children, you might say. I've delivered not quite 5,000 babies, but the half of the babies I'm delivering now, I delivered their mother or their father. So I know their history pretty much, you know, from day one. And I like to tease them a little bit once in a while. Well, you weighed 7 pounds, 10 ounces when you were born, and you woke me up at 3:30 in the morning or something. You know, you can kind of get them, whatever, next to them there, you know. And so talk to them about their family or whatever, you know, kind of get them comfortable and so forth before you listen to what they all have to say. But they come up with all kinds of problems, as you probably are quite aware. But the big thing is to point them to Jesus. You know, if they're anxious, which is a very common complaint these days, you remind them that they should cast all their cares upon Jesus because he cares for them. The majority of the people I take care of would profess to be Christians in my community where I live. Some I don't know if they really are, but they profess to be. Some that I'm quite sure they are not Christians, but especially those that are Christians, you know, I would remind them to pray to God about their problems and fears and so forth. It so happens that I'm also a minister. So, and I found out when I was ordained a minister, which was in 1986, their attitude changed quite a bit. They didn't, it didn't bother them so much if I was gone, for example. You know, they didn't get as upset or whatever, because they knew that ministers have to do other things too. But see, I get questions asked because they'll start with this. Well, you're a minister. And then they give me their church problem or their whatever it is, you know, that they want to talk to me about. So then, well, the opportunity is there to try and help them through this. And not that I have all the answers, but at least listening to them, you know, of course, is the big part of it. Another problem that I come up against fairly often is assurance of salvation. You know, they've accepted the Lord, but they don't feel saved. And I went through that myself, and I wouldn't be surprised a number of you went through that, you know, in your earlier life. And so I point them to 1 John, because that is the book that really, really talks about assurance of salvation. He uses the word that you can know 30-some times in that book. And so sometimes I read from that, or I'll quote several verses from that, you know, to help them to see, you know, what, how they can know that they're God's child. You know, I try to make analogies to their own children. You know, if your children disobeys, do you disown them? Do you put them out of the house and they're gone? They never come back? No, you discipline, you work with them, you know, you try to help them. And God doesn't, you know, throw us in the garbage pile, you know, when we do a few things wrong either. So try to get them to think, you know, how that really is. And the big one that I seem to deal with a lot is counseling the depressed. It's such a prevalent thing, and I wouldn't be surprised that you all run up against that too in various situations. I've dealt with a lot of people that are very depressed. And some of these Amish people, you know, the preacher preaches from Genesis 1 to Revelation, but he misses some things in between. So they don't always know about Elijah, but I try to bring them up to date on that if they don't know about Elijah and his mountaintop experience on Mount Carmel when King Ahab was the king of Israel. And Elijah was able to call down fire from heaven and consume the sacrifice. I assume you all know the story, but not all of them do. So I have to explain a little bit more about that and how that the prophets of Baal were unable to get an answer from Baal. And the people then, after they saw this tremendous miracle, the fire coming down, then they said, "The Lord, He is the God." They started to recognize that God was the true God. So Elijah won this great victory. And then, as you know, this wasn't too pleasing to Queen Jezebel, because it was an affront to her. Those prophets of Baal were kind of her doing. She's kind of the one that brought them in, the way I understand it. And so she said, "I'm going to, you know, about this time tomorrow, you're going to be dead, Elijah." Well, Elijah, it always kind of amazes me, but it shows he was human, I guess. You know, he started running away. He just called down fire from heaven. Why didn't he just do it again? You know? Or something like that. But he did. He forgot to call on God about his problem. So I go with this with my person about that. And so he got scared. He ran into the wilderness. He left his friends behind. He went all by himself. Another big mistake. And he wished he could die. Collapsed under the juniper tree and exhausted. And you know the story. So, I like to point out that even a tremendous man of God, like Elijah, could get very despairing, at least, if not really depressed. I mean, if he despaired of his life, to me, that's pretty far down, isn't it? Pretty far down. And so, it doesn't mean that you're not a Christian if you're depressed. Okay? That doesn't make you a non-Christian if you're depressed. I said, what was special about Elijah that very few people have, only one other person has experienced so far? They think a little bit, and I might have to help them out that, you know, he went to heaven without even dying in a chariot. He and Enoch, the rest of us all have to die before we go to heaven, unless till the rapture comes. That hasn't happened yet, so. They go, oh, yeah, okay. So, you know, you can kind of identify with that and realize that, you know, I'm not all alone, for one thing. There's plenty of other people that are in the same situation. And then I like to use the steps that Elijah used, that he took to recover, to help my patient know what they need to do. And the first one that he needed was rest. You know, he was running and running and running, so he lay down under the juniper tree and he had to rest for a good while. I don't know how long it was exactly, but he had to rest. And that's a big thing, of course, when you're depressed, they can't sleep. So we'd have to somehow get you to sleep. You know, you need proper sleep, proper rest, so you can think right and all that. You know about that. And then you need proper nutrition, proper food, proper drink. The angel came and gave Elijah the food and drink, you know, so that he could get something to help himself recover. And so that's what my patient needs to do as well. Number three, he needed companionship. You know, he made that big mistake by leaving without, sorry, I forgot about putting these up here. He left his last companion back behind somewhere, so now he's all by himself. Well, when you're feeling bad, you're feeling low, that's, you certainly don't want to be all by yourself. That's the last thing. You need other people to listen to you, and you listen to them, and so forth. And so he needed companionship. And he'd left that, so he'd made a mistake. Then number four, he needed to listen to what God had to say to him. And God had to talk a little while till he got his attention. You know, he had the fire and the earthquake and all these different things, but then he spoke in a still small voice, and Elijah listened to that. You remember that account. And I think God helped him with number five, that he needed to face his problems squarely. He couldn't just ignore them. A lot of people want to kind of get away from their problems. But no, you need to face them squarely and overcome them, work with them. And then you need to get back to the task at hand, to reach out to other people. God said, you need to go back, you need to anoint Elisha to take your place as a prophet. And there was a king of Israel and a king of Judah that he was, or no, there was another king of Syria, I think it was, that he was to anoint. And plenty of other things to do too, but those are things that are mentioned there in the scriptures. And so people that are down, you know, they need to get back up and start doing things, not just be thinking about poor little me, but start helping other people. And it's amazing how many times their low feelings go away when they start helping their neighbor, start helping their friend, and suddenly they feel better. It's amazing how that works. Instead of thinking about poor little old me, you start focusing on other people's things, and things definitely get better. So I've got a little bit more to say, but I think I'll give you time now. What do you see in your life? What's happened in your life? Do you have things that you can share of cases that have you've been able to minister to people's physical needs, emotional needs, spiritual needs, things like that? So you can, who wants to be first? Go ahead. You look like you're ready. To tell us about something. Okay, all right.
What was your question again?
Just what opportunities have you had to minister to others in your work that you do, or whatever? There's certain things that you've learned or ways you can help people.
Yeah, probably I work as a counselor there at Fresh Start Training Center.
Sure.
So this is, speaking in my language here.
Yeah.
I think probably the thing that I've dealt with the depression. I've been through several bouts of that, and probably the whole thing of reaching out to others is probably a real passion of mine when I'm speaking to the other guys. Mm-hmm. Because everything that Satan threw at Jesus in his ministry here, he turned around and used it to destroy Satan's kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
That's in every one of us as well. Every struggle, everything that Satan has ever thrown at us, we can turn around and use to destroy Satan's kingdom. And that's an awesome, that whole thing of everything that is coming at us is developing a ministry in us to help others. And that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. That's all you can. I mean, it's, my troubles are not just for me.
Right.
They're for everybody else too. They're my own unique tool to help others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the message of the. Yeah, I think that's the message of the gospel. Just get outside of your house, get outside of yourself, mm-hmm. reach out and help others.
Amen. Good.
You're looking for it.
Yeah, that's you bet. Mm-hmm.
I do have a question.
Okay.
All those steps that you're going through, and like, yeah, you definitely need to use them. If a person is like bipolar or in a frame of mind but delusional, and they cannot even focus enough to put anything in step, how do you respond to that?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that's definitely a case. You can talk and speak and talk and speak and pray, and it seems like just going around in circles. So how do you approach that?
I've went around in circles with people quite a few times. That's true. You can go around and around and around. I am a physician. I can prescribe medication if necessary. I try not to, but you know, sometimes we do use it. I usually use it. I tell them it's like using crutches when you have a broken leg or you know you can't walk for a while. You use them for a little while and then you hopefully get rid of that so you don't need them anymore. So probably if they're really bad, I would do something like that to try to get them to think right so you can work with them with their brains, with their thoughts, and then try to wean them off of that is probably what I would do. There's a counseling place real close to where I'm at, just 2 miles away. And so they work with me too. Plus another counselor comes and works in our basement one day a week. And so some go to him. I don't try to do it all myself. If you're going to take care of 35, 40 patients a day, you can't counsel that many people. You can only, about one or two a day, very extensive is about it for me. I keep after my secretary, now don't schedule them right in the middle of things here, you know, put them at the end or something so you have time, so you don't feel pressured. You know, but, and some, some come in with their list of 10 things, and they tell you about all 10, and then they're done. They're gathering up their purse, and they're ready to go, and you didn't even hardly tell them anything. They just needed to unload it. So it varies a lot, of course, on what the situation is. And, yeah, if there's a two-month-old with a high fever and things like that, well, I don't spend a lot of time talking about all this, but it's, you know, a lot of people do have these problems. 2 days ago, I had a lady came in, 25, 26, and she was crying, you know, quite emotionally distraught and everything, and the nurse, you know, had talked with her, and so I knew part of the problem, but, you know, they don't always tell you everything, and so I knew kind of what, and I knew her, you know, she wasn't a brand new patient, you know, I knew her from before, although she isn't one I delivered, though, and so we just kind of talked about the things that she'd already said, you know, and helped her. And then I said, is there something else? Well, yeah, there was. And so then we, you know, found out what that was. And a few more minutes of talking, she was with her mother. Her mother was with her. Then she was starting to get on top of it, you might say. And the mother was saying, boy, I'm sure glad we came here, you know, because they were hearing reassurance, you might say, basically from me. Is what it amounted to. And then I prayed for her and blessed her. And I don't know how she's all going to do, but I think I have pretty much confidence that she will, you know, rise above it and she'll do all right. Because she's been a Christian for some time, but was having a tough time handling some things that had happened to her that I don't want to say because... I know these things go all over the place. So. Yes.
Question.
Sure.
Well, so, just an approximation: the percentage of patients that you see that are that really have a physiological problem, as compared with people who bring to you emotional issues that obviously have the physiological connections. How would you describe a typical day of how this?
Okay, typical day, I probably would talk to about 4 or 5 people about emotional things. And the other 25 would be like, sore throat, high blood pressure, diabetes, pregnancy, because I take care of a lot of pregnant people. But a lot of them have trouble too.
Yeah.
See, that's often in it. In fact, another case I have that's ongoing, and I hope that she makes it through. It's postpartum depression. And she's a really difficult one because she doesn't know whether she should keep nursing her baby. She's so nervous that she can't, her milk doesn't let down so she can feed the baby. And so then the baby fusses, and then she's afraid the baby's going to get sick. And it was a little sick, but it wasn't that sick. But, you know, she thought it was really bad. And, you know, you just go on and on and on. So it takes some effort, you know, to work through situations like that. So, okay, there's probably more than that, but I don't detect them all. Is probably the truth, too. You know, we don't get to that point on this visit. Maybe the next visit or something. Sure.
We have a lady in our church. She's married, had a little child, and she's right in the middle now of a crisis of depression.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually suicidal and trying to work with that. She had made suicide attempts 13 or so years ago, a number of years ago. They hospitalized her. I think they put her on lithium or some kind of medication to get her stabilized. So, you know, we're trying to work with that and trying to figure out the priorities as far as the protocol. And so what we're thinking, probably the first priority is to protect her life, do whatever we have to do to keep her life safe.
Right.
If that means medication, if that means being in the hospital for a while. And then, what, from your experience, what would be a right order of steps to, you know, go through with something like this?
Well, you definitely need to do all the talking you can, you know, to get things prepared. And most of the people have already done a lot of that by the time they get to me. I'm a little ways down the trail.
And we have been meeting together with other people from the church, praying, talking to her, letting her share, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing that. Spiritual warfare, you know, going through all that.
Right.
And so obviously there's probably some physical things going on, mm-hmm. as well as spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to address it on all fronts.
Right.
But to me right now, since she's made attempts to take her life, I think we have to, you know, protect her and make that a priority.
Right. If it's that severe that she's attempted to take her own life, then you can't just send her to a day counselor, you know, and ignore that. If it's bad enough, I would have them go to the hospital probably to get stabilized, like you said, and then follow up after that. Yeah, by the time they come to me, they've already done most of those things. The ministers have been there, they've talked to their, but then some of them haven't. Some I ask, well, who do you talk to? Do you have somebody to talk to? And they say, no, not really. Well, then I try to help them to get somebody to talk to. They wouldn't be that bad, though, the ones that I'm talking about like that. It sounds to me like you're going the right track. You just have to keep following through. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, anybody else? This is good to share about things.
I might just say a couple things that I found and experienced with the practice that I've been doing. I work in two different settings.
Mm-hmm.
When I work in the emergency department, where I'm very limited, and so I have to watch because I cannot point people to Jesus necessarily unless they ask.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think the Anabaptists, especially conservative Anabaptists, have a distinct advantage there because people can kind of identify us.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tend to ask questions. And I find, you know, I think Peter, 1 Peter 3:15 says, always be ready to give an answer.
Mm-hmm.
They ask us questions about who you are, what you believe, you know, when they have times. And then with that type of a thing in the public setting that I'm in, a public hospital, I can answer. I'm, you know, I'm free to answer the questions, but I can't do it otherwise unless they ask. But in the home health setting that I work as well, then it's a little different. Then I have much more freedom to do that kind of thing. So I know, you know, I had made a note here, just then when the opportunity avails itself, point them to Jesus. Because opportunities will come up, and it's like sometimes the opportunity is there before you know it. And I just very much think we're in 1 Peter 3:15 says, be ready to give that answer. You know, they're
right.
Going to ask you, be prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it hits me, and it's like, oh, you know, I'm not prepared as I should be, or I didn't expect it. So those things will happen. Right. And I've, you know, I've had people, you know, in the emergency department ask me if I would pray for them. Mm-hmm. Well, I will, but I can't go to them and say, can I pray for you? They have to initiate the conversation in that way.
So. Yeah, I have a little advantage of you. I'm in my office, so I can do what I want to. Yeah. That does help, and it's on your own turf. I agree. How many of you read the book Gray Matter by David Levy? Okay, so a few of you did. That's good. It's a good book to read. It's very challenging how that he, just real quick for those of you that haven't read it, he's a Jewish, he's a neurosurgeon, so he works in the brain. It's very life and death type situations. If he messes up, you know, that could be the end of him. If he does it right, it may save the life. You know, you have a very aneurysm in a artery in your brain, and he fills it with little, I forget the name of it, so that it seals it off, you might say, so it doesn't burst. Okay, well, he's got this conviction that he starts praying for his patients before he does these procedures. I mean, it's life and death, you know. And it just progresses through the book, and it's pretty amazing. It's given me courage to do more of that. You know, I've always prayed some, but I pray more frequently now, you might say. Maybe don't miss as many opportunities, you know, to pray for people. Of course, for me, when I'm delivering a baby and there's trouble, the prayers go quite frequently. You know, when you're in trouble, that's when they happen. But I have nurses that are praying too, you know, and the baby's born, and it's praise the Lord. You know, that's great. So we do have opportunity to share in that way. That's a little different than some others. I think we have about 2 minutes and 47 seconds left. Does anybody have any other thoughts they want to give? Yeah, sure.
I had been to some Christian medical conferences, like just in Canada and in Toronto the last few years. And one strategy that I got from there that I find is quite helpful within our legal system, because we can't force our beliefs on anyone, is to open the door of opportunity just by directing the questions the right way. And mm-hmm. I also work in a public hospital, and I see a lot of crisis. I do a lot of admissions. And part of our model of care is holistic care. And holistic care also includes spiritual care. So we are covered to provide spiritual care. But we have to do it in the right way and not offensive. So then I have a couple of questions that really helped open the door to get that interest from the patient, get them to ask questions or, you know, be interested in what you have to share, is to ask them, how are you coping with this? Because a lot of them come to us in crisis. Mm-hmm. And you ask them if they have a support system, where they get their strength from. And that opens a door of opportunity.
Good questions. Mm-hmm. How are you coping with this? Yep, that's good. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I've enjoyed this. I trust you've been challenged again. 1 Timothy 4:12 says, be thou an example of the believers in word and conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. If we can be that kind of an example, I think it goes a long way. And then we can add some choice, good words of encouragement. And then we can be a help. We can minister people's needs, whatever kind of needs they have in their life. So thanks again for coming. I think 1 minute we're supposed to be gone, so we will dismiss you at this point. You can ask me questions after if you like.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.